Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of The Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. I am your host, Brian J. Rowan. With me, as always, my two cohorts. There is Danny King, writer for The Film Stage.
Welcome, Brian. Thank you.
Thank you, I guess, for welcoming me to my podcast.
Thank you.
There's also Nick Newman, associate editor of The Film Stage.
Is your phone an Android?
God damn it. Piss off and die, Ghost Man. So today, on the Film Stage Show, we will not be having a discussion topic. Initially, we were going to talk about the films of Michael Mann, which I think could have been a very thrilling discussion topic. Instead, we decided since American Sniper hit a bullseye at the box office, what? How clever was that, guys? I just came up with that off the top of my head. We'll be talking about that film before getting into our full review of Black Hat. So get ready, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to be a full show. Even though I did not see American Sniper, because this whole thing was decided moments before we began to podcast, effectively proving to me that whatever visions of power I had over this podcast are all futile and non-existent.
Wow.
But that's life. Anyway, follow us on Twitter. Twitter.com/filmstageshow. Feel free to email us at podcast@thefilmstage.com. And, of course, rate and comment on iTunes to let us know how we are doing. And let's just get into the show. So the first film up that we'll be talking about is American Sniper, which stars Bradley Cooper as perhaps the most prolific American sniper, who would have thought, in history, Chris Kyle. This movie is directed by Clint Eastwood, based off of the life story of Chris Kyle. And you can bet that that has created some issues with people who like their movies based on a true story to actually hold fast to facts. There's been a lot of talk about the controversy about this film. Is it jingoistic? Is it nationalistic? Is it truthful? Does it have to be? Let's find out. Nick Newman, why don't you kick us off? What did you think of American Sniper?
I just saw American Sniper not just today, but I was sitting in the theater an hour ago as the images from Eastwood's motion picture were being projected in front of my eyes. So it's fresh on my mind. And where do you want me to start?
Where do I want you to start?
I don't know. Is there like an inception point to this discussion?
I don't fucking know. I haven't seen the movie.
Right.
Is it a good movie?
Yeah, it's very good.
Okay, there. Danny King, what did you think of American Sniper? No, Nick Newman. I'll start it off. I have not seen this film, so I'm going to come to you as though I were a friend who is like, hey, bro, think about seeing American Sniper this weekend. I've heard that it's a jingoistic, battle-glorifying treatise of lies that is poorly directed and hammily acted. Do you agree with those statements, or would you like to put up something?
When I was still in the lobby of the theater, I just decided to fire off a really incendiary tweet about the film. Do you want me to read it?
Yes.
I'll read it verbatim. You can find it at twitter.com/Nick_Newman/status69421203142123.
Always laugh when you do that.
Those last five digits, actually, if you switch one of them, you'll get my my zip code. I won't say what, but anyway. At that link, status/55694. No, okay. I said, anybody saying Eastwood's work in American Sniper is indifferent, flat, uninspired, etc., shouldn't be paid to write about films. Now, I said this because I went into it hearing quite a bit. It is, in layman's terms, a film that people won't shut the fuck up about, and
right,
I'm not going to. And now I'm here to not shut the fuck up about it. This is one of the best directed films that I think I would have. To say I saw it this year, last year is kind of, it's a bit of a tricky situation because it is technically a 2014 release. I think it's one of the best directed films of 2014. Eastwood's work in it is, how do I put it in this compromise, the surprise of seeing it. I never would have expected he would have the sort of hand, he would exert the sort of hand that he does here in depicting a combat situation as messy as the kind that goes on in Iraq, or really the Middle East at all, in the quote-unquote war on terror. Sort of the coverage that he's getting out of each scene, the way that he's alternating between combatant and, you know, American soldier, is really stunning. And the way that he reworks this time and time again, because pretty much, I don't know, 70% of the film scenes set in Iraq are primarily action-oriented. And there's such an excitement to it that is never once compromised by the fact that this is also meant to be a really horrifying situation. It's depicted as such. And it's an extremely violent film. I mean, if you've seen the trailer, it's an excellent trailer where it depicts the situation where, which is actually the opening scene of the film, where he has to decide if he's going to kill a woman and a child who were carrying a grenade. And as it turns out, as you see 30 minutes later, he does. And it's depicted in a very... That's not a spoiler.
Okay.
And
spoiler
depicted,
for the trailer.
And it's depicted in a very unblinking fashion. The kind of... I mean, these are shots that stay on the dead bodies for, you know, as long as 5 seconds as you're observing this hole that he just put through their body. And it's not depicted as this, you know, America, fuck yeah, just killed some ragheads, you know, for the sake of George W. Bush. And forgive my use of that term, but I'm using it to make a point.
George W. Bush?
Yeah. Yes. Forgive me for saying his name here.
I mean, but, we all do try to forget, do we not?
Yes. But it is, I mean, it kind of sets the tone pretty well, which is to say that much of the film is at once grim and also incredibly thrilling. And there is a tension inherent in that, which is how you're going to follow this and continue to maintain that sort of feeling and not creating some sort of disgusting, jingoistic, let's go kill some terrorists kind of story. And while I think that the script by Jason Hall has several hackneyed moments, I think most of the material set in the U.S. is pretty awful. And, you know, the film does kind of go to certain ends to display that, yes, you have to be careful when you're killing somebody, because it underlines twice, because you return to the scene from the beginning, 30 minutes into the film, you know, it's underlined like, oh man, they'll fry your ass and they'll send you to wherever if you, you know, if you're wrong about this or something. While it does have that, I think that Eastwood's work as an image maker is powerful enough to undercut what would otherwise, in many other directors' hands, just be kind of this very polemical piece of work. It was, for me, it's kind of, although the films aren't similar enough where this is a totally fair comparison, it's kind of what I wanted to see in The Hurt Locker years ago. The Hurt Locker is not a film I really have much affection for, despite admiring several components of Catherine Bigelow's work. I do think that it tries to have this blank slate character who you can sort of project things on, and he's put in these thrilling situations, but I did not find the film particularly compelling because I didn't know who this person was. And American Sniper sometimes goes to too many ends to show you who this person was. Again, the material set at home is quite problematic, but I think that... I don't want to make it sound like I'm making excuses for what are some issues with the film when I say that I think that it does a good job as a wind-up, as sort of a wind-up to the pitch, that are these scenes set overseas that I think basically telegraph very clearly the contradiction that this person is in, where I personally do not feel very sad when I see, you know, somebody who's going to fire a rocket at a convoy of U.S. soldiers killed. I don't really feel sad when I see that, but I do recognize that there is a problem there, which is that the U.S. invasion of Iraq was a terrible thing. It was basically a criminal act that was organized under false pretenses, and why he's there becomes an issue in the back of my mind, and I think the film allows you to project that onto it. And I think it wants you to project something specific like that. I don't think it's a jingoistic film. There isn't a single moment in this entire movie that shows the killing of a faceless soldier as, oh man, that's really fucking cool. It depicts it as a very tough situation. And Eastwood goes to lengths to show that this was something that was not easy on him. Now, whether or not this is actually true of the actual Chris Kyle, I can't really say. I have read a lot of comments from him that are troubling about how he apparently enjoyed killing. You know, if he felt that way, then okay, that's one thing, but it's what the film chooses to depict. And the film does not choose to depict him in that sort of thoughtless killer fashion. It's a movie that I think, you know, I think that with any luck, it's a film that people will be grappling with for a long time. It's a film that people will continue returning to, and it will ask people exactly all of someone like this is important, and yet why it is not always okay what they're doing. It's a very complex film. It's a movie that, having just seen an hour ago, I still feel like I have to work through parts of. I do think the movie kind of hurts itself with its final montage, which to me is a little too saccharine. That might sound a bit heartless when it comes to the death of an American hero. As you may know, Chris Kyle was actually killed in February of 2013 on U.S. soil. He was killed at a gun range by a mentally disturbed former veteran. And sort of the ending montage set to taps-like music, to me, was problematic. But I do think that everything that precedes it does not necessarily flow with that kind of thing, that sort of poor fallen hero kind of story. I think it depicts a very complicated man who, as the movie shows, could be really kind of a son of a bitch, who could be very heartless, who could be selfish, and that it goes to these lengths to do that, I think is great. I don't know if the movie itself is great. I think it's at least quite good, and it's a movie that I'm going to be thinking about for some time. Anyway, I've been talking too long. Let's hand it over to the podcast's biggest Eastwood fan, Danny King.
Danny King, before you begin, I would like you to apologize personally to the listeners at home for your audio quality last week.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was that bad.
I mean, we kept stopping and starting, and we did a lot of stuff that obviously had to get edited out, and I did my best, but we just wanted to say we're aware of it, and hopefully it won't be a problem this
week. All right, yeah.
So say you're sorry.
I am sorry. I wasn't, you know, being lazy or anything. I was in a usual recording situation, so I apologize.
Good.
I'm glad it's better today.
All right, now tell them you love them.
I love you guys. Please, right. Please keep listening. As I mentioned a couple weeks ago, when I had American Sniper in my top 10, I also really like this movie. And I sort of agree with Nick on a lot of his ideological points about where the film stands. And I think it was actually a couple weeks ago, there was a tweet by Nick Pinkerton that had something to the effect of like, A Wolf of Wall Street, an American Sniper double bill of like year-end prestige titles that are just horribly misread by people. And I do sort of think there's a connection where, I mean, last year when we were talking about Wolf of Wall Street and just sort of being baffled by how people could watch that movie and think that it's sympathizing with that character or glorifying it. I feel the same thing in American Sniper, where it's very clear to me that Eastwood has a very clear-eyed perspective on this material, and he's not really sort of rah-rahing anything that's going on. I also agree with Nick's tweet about Eastwood's direction of the film, because there have been a lot of people that have seemed to just pop up and complain every once in a while when he gets nominated for something. There's even a similar reaction to Black Hat, where a lot of people have been coming out and calling some of Michael Mann's deliberate choices directorial, like inadequacies or just deficiencies. And those swipes at both of these directors are sort of equally infuriating for me. Because I do think American Sniper is a really well-directed film. And one of the reasons I want to see it again is not just because the film is so complex, but because I think they're is probably more going on in the U.S. scenes than I initially thought. My first viewing, I was sort of with Nick, where I didn't think they were that strong. But as I look back on it, I think the movie, not only the combat sequences are incredibly tense, but I think the way it portrays the character's PTSD is really kind of astute as well. There's a scene where he's approached by a soldier, and he has trouble communicating with him, and that's one of the more outspoken examples, but it's still a really good scene. But there's another shot I remember where he's sitting in front of the TV, and you hear battle noises, and then the camera kind of circles around, And it's sort of it's in his living room, and I think one of his kids is sitting next to him. So when the cameras, as the camera's pivoting, you sort of expect to see like a cartoon or something on TV. But then the camera makes the rotation and the TV is just blank. And it's this really haunting image of just imagining like him and his kids sitting in the living room with nothing on the TV, and like they're not talking and his mind is completely elsewhere. There were a lot of touches like that that I think were really strong. And I also think Sienna Miller is really good in a role that's not that deeply written or anything. I still just thought she did a good job. And yeah, I'm curious to see it again. I had no idea that the film was being released in IMAX. So just for the power of the soundtrack, I might make that something to try, because it would be pretty intense.
All right. Well, I obviously have nothing to add, so unless, Nick, you would like to address any of Danny's points or anything, it seems as though everyone seems to like this film.
Oh, no, just one thing I want to say is that the post-war material, i.e. the scenes where he's at home, the final scenes, I think are pretty good generally. I think that its depiction of post-traumatic stress disorder is very effective in that you do kind of feel like you are there with him. I really didn't like the final scene of the movie, which kind of has he's going to die blinking in red on the screen.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that.
Where he says, "All right, son, you look after the women here," and it's like, you know, it's just kind of, all right. And then the sort of the slow push in on kill him is not great, really, but
sort of awkward.
Yeah, but I am willing to overlook that, because I think that too, I don't know, I think you risk making a mountain out of a molehill with a film that has this many good qualities. I mean, it's there, it is a problem, but I don't think that it's sufficient enough to, you know, make the film into a real problem picture or something.
All right, excellent.
Picture. But yeah.
Well, American Sniper is now in wide release. It just got wide release this weekend, so it's available for everyone to see. It is fucking killing it at the box office. So yeah, I guess get out there and see it. I can't wait till I'm able to see it and add my thoughts in as well. For now, though, let's move on to our primary review. This is of the newest film by Michael Mann, the director of such films as Heat, Public Enemies, Last Mohicans, Collateral. And, this movie stars Chris Hemsworth as a hacker who is currently in prison, who is recruited by the U.S. and Chinese governments, who have partnered to try and stop a black hat hacker who is causing all kinds of mayhem for unspecified reasons. Let's listen to the trailer.
Some hacker is hitting our financial markets.
Four major banks, and that's just what we know about?
If we want clues to the hacker's identity, we need a man named Hathaway.
What do we know about this guy?
He's a convicted hacker serving 15 years. MIT. Genius coder.
I want you to commute my sentence for identification and the apprehension of the guy you're after. Those are the terms.
So we're on two ends of the box office spectrum. Because, for one, American Sniper did great. And for two, I mean, Black Hat just didn't do as well, apparently. Do we have any firm numbers on that?
Do you want me to... I can pull it up right now.
I can pull it up right now.
I think it's
single
digits.
Who pulls it up first?
So American Sniper made $90.2 million, which is quite a bit, while
yeah,
Black Hat
opened number 10 with $4.03 million.
Ooh.
That is below Unbroken, The Hobbit, The Battle of Five Armies, Into the Woods, Imitation Game, Selma, Taken 3, Paddington, The Wedding Ringer, which made an astounding $21 million, and American Sniper, which just decimated records.
Yeah.
Wow. Pretty nuts.
The percent change from last week is plus 15,465.5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the theater count, it went from, I guess, 4 to 3,555. That's crazy. But yeah, so Black Hat, like I said, starring Chris Hemsworth, Viola Davis, Lee Hoon Wang, Wei Tang, So let's find out what we thought of it. Danny King, you didn't go first last time, so it is your turn. Step up to the bat, tell us what you thought of Black Hat.
Yeah, I really liked Black Hat. There's a moment right before the movie started when I sort of just realized, I mean, it's something I had known, but it really hit me that it was like my first time in almost 6 years being in the theater for a Michael Mann movie, which was both really thrilling, but also now that the box office numbers have come in, like kind of sad. But at the same time,
now it is your last time.
Yeah. So basically this is the last one we got. Just kidding. But yeah, this was really good. I feel like a lot of people of Mann's later career are kind of partial to Miami Vice. And I think one of the reasons is that film is so, it's so not dependent on plot. I mean, I've seen that movie twice, maybe within the last year, and I couldn't even tell you what the plot is. I just sort of remember all of the tangential moments that are sort of what his style is all about. And I think Black Hat has a lot of those moments, but it is maybe a bit more geared toward the plot, which means I don't think it's maybe as great of a film as Miami Vice or some of his other later films. But it's still really solid. I think Chris Hemsworth makes for a pretty fantastic man hero, particularly in the opening. There's a nice moment when he's, I guess the prison is being checked for like suspicious material, and he kind of gets taken and interviewed. And then when he's thrown back in his cell, there's a few shots where it just sort of hangs with him in his cell. And then he does his wall push-ups that have become very notorious.
I guess we'll get to it when I talk about it, but there are so many things like I couldn't avoid on Twitter, people talking about like wall push-ups and I don't know, some other shit that we'll get to. And I just like, you know, I'll say right off the bat that I think you have to want to not like things like that. Like, I don't see how...
You mean people were making fun of it?
Yeah, like people were making fun of the wall push-ups. And like, I guess it's just one of those things where I don't understand how you would go into a movie like this, knowing the kind of movie it is, seeing it, especially in the context, like it was good for that moment. And so I feel like you have to be like, okay, this is what I want to think about this film.
Yeah.
And find things to kind of, cause I mean the casting of Chris Hemsworth as a hacker. Yeah. Like that's kind of nuts.
Yeah.
But he does play it well.
Yeah. And I mean, knowing the amount of research Mann does, I'm sure like, he didn't invent a style of push-up. Like, I'm sure he's been in a prison and seen someone do that. So I tend to give him credit for verisimilitude in, like, environmental details like that. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that was a good scene. And then Hemsworth also has a fantastic, like, man mantra speech where him and one of the tough things about this movie is just saying the names of the international cast, but it's him and the love interest in a restaurant in a really great scene. And they're talking and he gives a speech about prison time.
Yeah. I'm doing the time ain't doing me.
Yeah. That was like one of the great like man moments in this movie.
Yeah.
There's another one where he just gets out and he's looking onto a tarmac and you feel it where it's like the movie has like broke from the requirements of the scene and we're just into this space where we're with the character and he's looking out on this tarmac and it's like 30 seconds of just pure introspection. Moments like that are so great. Also Viola Davis was pretty fantastic. It was good seeing this the day after I saw A Most Violent Year, because Jessica Chastain's character in that is such like a cliched example of a strong female character. Whereas Viola Davis in this movie is, you just like don't question it. She's just like a force. Yeah, I think maybe as the film goes on, like I said, because it's kind of attached to its plot, it maybe doesn't have as many moments of like pure just greatness as I've seen in other later Mann films, but this is still really good. And I agree with you that people nitpicking this movie, I just don't get it. There was one tweet exchange a while ago where one guy was complaining about the shot at the beginning that says stock footage on it.
Yeah.
He was like, wait, did a wide release film really get put out with an image that said stock footage on it? And someone replied to him like, yeah, that's sort of like aping news footage format. And the initial tweeter responded like, oh no, that's preposterous. Like that's not what's happening. And then the other guy responded like, wow, that escalated pretty quickly. Like, there's clearly just something there that's not even the movie's problem. So yeah, I think this is a great movie, and I'm sad that it only made $4 million, but I'm happy to have it.
Yeah. Nick Newman, what about yourself?
Let me just say, first of all, I was one of the people making fun of the headfirst push-ups, but I did that lovingly because, for me, Michael Mann's films are a great joy, in part because of how they blend the super serious and the absolutely absurd. And for me, kind of the, like American Sniper in a way, sort of the tension of, is Michael Mann totally aware how silly this is or not, or really taking it seriously? And I think that Black Hat is kind of a perfect territory for him then, because the whole idea of super hackers taking down the world, some guy, some vaguely New Zealander guy.
Yeah, I don't know what that guy
who looks like a tour guide. basically, him doing this is... It's kind of like a perfect fit, I guess, because his obsession with digital culture has really kind of been at an all-time high, at least relative to other working filmmakers. So with that in mind, I mean, as a huge Mann fan, it was kind of... I mean, of course I enjoyed this movie. Like, it seems like... Because it has such a Mannish quality, and that is kind of like a greatest hits collection of his work in a way. And... for me, that's a really good thing, and I think the film actually succeeds in terms that extend beyond what that label might and does imply, because I think that sort of his vision of how you make a film is so far removed from how pretty much anybody else handling this material would take it. Some people have been saying that, you know, if Michael Mann didn't direct this, people wouldn't like it. And kind of the best response to that is, well, nobody would have directed this like Michael Mann, exactly. Yeah. And for that, I'm really grateful, because I think that Black Hat has a very sort of slippery quality to it that is representative of his work from Miami Vice onward. That is Miami Vice, Public Enemies, and now this. And as someone who... I don't know if this is where people turn off the podcast. As someone who might consider Public Enemies his favorite Mann film, that is a good thing. I think Public Enemies is like one of the great movies of the 21st century.
I love Public Enemies. I feel like we had this special moment between us before. Like, we do love Public Enemies. Yeah.
I'm writing my senior thesis right now on sort of films that use digital cinema, digital filmmaking as an extension, as a pondering of the idea of the death of the photograph. I've written about it in the Anthology of the Photographic Image, and Public Enemies is like the film about that. it does it so perfectly that anyway, the movie is a masterpiece. Black Hat is not, but it doesn't really need to be, because it is quite good on its own terms. I think that, you know, for me, the only real disappointment of the movie is that it doesn't have kind of the same kind of daring formal quality that I think permeates both his prior film and Miami Vice. Miami Vice, I mean, that's a movie that kind of feels like it was beamed from an alien planet. Like, it's sometimes, like, I watched the film, it's amazing that it exists as it does. It feels, it looks, moves, and feels like nothing else out there.
Yeah, it's crazy, but I love that film.
And for me, the worst parts of Black Hat are the ones that feel a little more homogenous, where sometimes, you know, some of the hacking stuff is a little tired because it's just kind of like a guy sitting at his computer going. And yeah, that's,
I mean,
not...
like, at least it's not like, you know, they, I mean, didn't, like, visualize it in a, like, you know, oh, like what, Swordfish, that fucking movie? Like, mm-hmm. When he's like, I'm going to make a worm to punch through the firewall. And then you actually saw, like, a thing, like, opening a orb in another thing. And, like, it was, you know, I appreciated the commitment to this is just lines of fucking code.
Yeah. No, and it is depicted in an interesting way. In fact, I read a New York Times piece which showed that Mann actually had sort of the network of a computer mapped as to what happens when you're actually typing keys. And knowing that made it more interesting. And
I read that same article, actually.
I didn't mind that.
I want to know how electricity moves. I want to know, like, everything. It was kind of nuts.
And, you know, people are talking about how the depiction of technology in this movie is absurd. I mean, I think that relative to what it's depicting, it's grounded enough in that it has kind of a...
How is it absurd to them?
Well, I think that it has a... I think it has a small enough scale, is the thing, where it's not... Again, like, the idea of using it to destroy a... It's never really explained how this computer, this code, co-written by Hathaway, a black hat hacker named Hathaway, and his, you know, guy, his roommate...
From MIT.
What?
His roommate from MIT.
Yeah.
Because he went to MIT.
Of course he did. How that, you know, actually gets into a computer. I mean, okay, but who gives a shit?
Like, yeah. Like, it's a conduit. It's a real thing. Like, that's, that is what people do. And, like, honestly, to me, computers are fucking magic anyway. Mm-hmm. Like, even if you were to explain it to me, I would just go, uh-huh.
Yeah.
Sure. That sounds right.
Yeah. Like, and I think that, and you know, not to get too much into that when I say that, again, Mann's action scenes are really spectacular. There's some really beautiful stuff here. There's a shot where a character is killed, and you see them fall to the ground, and you see them blink as they hit the ground. And I almost started clapping in the theater when that happened, because it's the exact kind of expression that, again, really nobody else is bothering to put into their films, is that quick moment where you actually see the life leave somebody, which something he also did in Public Enemies in a really beautiful scene that you may or may not remember. Actually did it a couple of times in that film. But anyway, Black Hat for me has, it has a very special quality in that it kind of takes a lot of very conventional molds. It takes, you know, it takes one of the Avengers, for instance, and pits him in this very strange action film that I think kind of shames something like what he is best known for. And Chris Hemsworth here, I should say, I think is excellent. One thing that needs to be singled out is his accent, which I really appreciated, in that, well, usually when an actor of British or Australian or New Zealand descent stars as an American, they just kind of do like a flat register.
Yeah.
Whereas here there is a very kind of, there's kind of a history in his voice, I think. There's something kind of implacable about it that I really appreciated. It kind of reminded me in a way of Gong Li in Miami Vice, who is Cuban Chinese.
Yeah.
I don't think that's actually a thing, but it kind of makes something, it makes a little extra something out of a small aspect of the film. And that for me kind of sums it all up. These small things and reworking them, retooling them to make them into, you know, just more exciting, more original pieces of content. And by the way, the digital cinematography, you're either on board with it or you're not, as Danny indicated.
Right.
I'm so on board with it. I love Mann's digital cinematography.
Yeah, his movies are so fucking beautiful.
And so for me, if it is kind of an instance of, I thought that the first like half of this film was good, but kind of stiff. At times, I found that some of the rhythms of it were a little hard to get into and groove with. But I think that basically everything from an explosion onward, well, really before that, everything from when they get to Hong Kong onward, I thought was just kind of a real joy to sit through. It's the kind of movie I gladly sit through multiple times, which is more than I can say for, God, what was the last wide-release action film that I could say that about? I don't even know. And the problem is that this is going to be in theaters for another week before it's relegated. And it's too bad, but I think that if you're listening to this show, you kind of... I like to think we've curated a man-friendly audience.
I should hope so. So yeah, there's a lot of things that I loved in this movie. for one, I mean, it's beautiful. It's that wonderful kind of grain, light-infused cinematography that Mann is now famous for. I also just love the way his characters and like the environments move and work within his camera movements. He doesn't really shoot like anyone else that I know. And it gives all the scenes, even the ones where people are just sitting around a computer talking about code recognition and recomposition and everything else, it's just like it gives it this kind of weird, not even freneticism or action, but it just makes it tangible and beautiful to watch. It's a compelling film, even in scenes where some jaded members of the audience may be like, come on, when are they going to get to the fireworks factory? When are they going to shoot someone? It's an action film that has not a lot of action. And for a movie that begins with a reactor exploding, I mean, it doesn't really go big. Like, all of the action is surprisingly intimate. And, man, no one shoots a gunfight like, man. No one knows how to, like, I guess, you know, direct a sound mixer or a sound editor to make gunshots sound as meaningful as man does. Even if someone has a machine gun that they're like firing on fully automatic, each individual shot and each individual bullet collision is just intense, and it really puts you in the middle of everything. And yeah, I have this thing where, you know, if I'm in a movie and it's not holding me, I'll get antsy and I'll never look at my phone or my watch, but the thought will definitely cross into my mind. And I did not have that for a single second during this film. And yeah, I mean, man's making a kind of film that I guess we don't see a lot of anymore. It's a smaller action film. You know, the world isn't really in danger. No one really knows what this guy, this other hacker, is even trying to do. One of the things he does is just manipulate soy futures. I mean, you know, it starts off with an explosion at a nuclear power plant, and then it goes to soy futures, and then it's just kind of nothing for a little bit. It's really nuts. It's really crazy. It's really intense how they are able to get so much intensity without doing anything. And characters that you wouldn't expect to have any affection for actually really grow on you. There's the guy who plays the U.S. Marshal who is following him. I don't think he's credited on IMDb. I'm pretty sure that was Holt McAlaney.
Yeah, I think so.
Right. He was the lead actor. He's been in a bunch of really great movies, and he was the lead actor on a show I like that no one saw called Lights Out. And you know him. Like, you know, you'd expect in a certain kind of film for him to be like a real dick about things, but he's not. Like, he's not really even like a problem, and he doesn't seem to harbor any ill will towards Hathaway, the hacker that he has to, you know, hold on to and make sure he doesn't escape custody. He's just a guy doing his job, and Michael Mann excels at people who are able to put aside emotional thoughts and you know, be able to just do his job. There's a point in this movie where a character literally says, "We can grieve later, now we have to survive." And I'm just like, yeah, that's it. Get ready, because this is going to be awesome. And, I mean, Viola Davis, she's fantastic in the film. You know, she has a couple of those great, great lines and deliveries where you're just like, God, it is no wonder that this woman has reached the heights, I guess, you know, of her personally in acting and her character in the Justice Department where she is now. And another thing I kind of love about Michael Mann's films is they never seem to, like, really focus on gender or ethnicity of any kind. You know, it's not like the Chinese military guy working for their anti-cyber terror unit, I guess, you know, goes to his sister, who's, like, one of the best network engineers that he knows, and he's just like, hey, come and help me with this. And it's never, like, really, like, expressed that, like, she's a woman. It's just like, I just need someone who's good, and you're really good, and I trust you. And then you have Viola Davis, and no one's ever like, you know, don't try to pull the race or gender card on me. Mm-hmm. It's just, there's such like a freedom from any kind of conflict between characters aside from professional courtesy and respect. And that's what I love about it. It's really fantastic. So yeah, Black Hat, get out there and fucking see it, assholes.
Yeah, one thing I really liked, it's sort of annoying to have to invoke 2001 so soon after Interstellar, but the opening where he sort of like burrows into the circuits, I don't even know what the proper term is, but yeah. At a certain point, I mean, when he started doing this, like sort of taking his camera into these electronic cables or whatever, I was kind of rolling my eyes at first because I'm like, that's something I feel like has been done and it's usually pretty corny, but he takes it so far that at a certain point, it is just like a light show, a light show like from 2001.
Yeah.
And the fact that he went so far with it, I was like, he earned that. And that was a pretty fantastic opening.
Yeah. The opening is like a wordless, I don't even know how long it is, but it's like this, it's this really deep dive into the circuitry. Mm-hmm. And like, you kept saying how far he goes with it. I would say how like far he goes with it in terms of like, it just kept going on a smaller and smaller scale.
Yeah.
And you just got this little like collection of lights, little tiny lights, like little squares of light that just zip around. And it was such a beautiful visualization of the act of someone taking over a network and exacting their horrible will on it. The way that, and then the way that there's always this moment where you can kind of see just this one tiny little pinprick of light on the actual board of the computer light up. And it's kind of like, that's the open window. But we've dove so deep into the physical circuitry that you see this incredible action occur. You see this incredible like catastrophe in the opening scene with the nuclear power plant. And it all began because of that one little pinprick of light that said it was okay to send this stream of words and numbers and slashes and shit that just completely decimates everything. And in a movie that, you know, does involve shootouts and action scenes and physical conflict, I mean, a person hitting an enter key is able to take out and melt down a nuclear reactor, and a person with a gun, you know, might not even be able to kill one person in the middle of the street. And it's just this kind of really insane, interesting dynamic that man is able to orchestrate really well. So any final thoughts on this before we jump into spoilers?
I was kind of, one of the things that fascinated me most about this film is how it, certain scenes kind of carry on in a manner that, again, as I said about Miami Vice, how kind of that movie sometimes feels like it was beamed from an alien planet. There is kind of this weird distance quality. I know that someone on Twitter joked after the film's first screening got out, they asked how Bristonian is Chris Hemsworth in Black Hat, and someone responded, very. But I think there's something to that, actually. I mean, if you're familiar with the films of Robert Bresson, you know that he used, he considered his actors models, people who basically stood in front of the camera and were able to get across certain emotional and ideological points without having to actually express themselves too strongly for fear of weighing down the message he's trying to get across. And I think Mann kind of does that as well. I think that he, despite getting very good performances out of this cast, both recognizable and unrecognizable actors alike, treats everything with at once an intimacy and a distance. And for me, that's kind of what separates it from the bulk. Again, what separates it from the bulk of action films that are made today is that there is something very foreign in the whole thing. The climax of the film, which I won't give away, is very strange because it basically comes down to, you know, it's all this supercomputer hacking stuff. It comes down to fists. And it comes down to, you know, natural lighting and this sort of ancient ceremony. And for me, it was a great joy to see that. It kind of, as a big man auteurist, it kind of felt right in his wheelhouse. But I feel like I'm just sort of spouting off points now. I don't know if anything I'm saying makes any sense whatsoever. Maybe that'll lead us into spoilers for all I know. But
let's go into spoilers. Did this movie end the way you thought that it would? This movie for me was very difficult to predict.
How did it end?
I mean, so there's a point where everything goes to shit, I guess is one way to put it. They're closing in on this network that is working under this hacker who's doing something. They don't know what. And like, for instance, they chase a couple of his agents down a sewage outlet thing. And their attack team is cut to ribbons by both gunfire and claymore mines. And then there's a shootout taking place at the mouth of the outlet and this shipping yard. And then after that, they've kind of figured out where they're going. Chris Hemsworth has used an NSA... What would you even call that? An NSA program to help reconstruct code to find the IP address of the actual attacker. Yeah, Black Widow, they call it. And then Hemsworth, they find out that he did that, so he's going to go back to jail. He is on the run to go to find the hacker who is in Jakarta. And as they're kind of getting ready to say goodbye, the attack team from earlier appears, just fucking blows up the car that up until then, I would say one of the co-leads of the movie was in.
Mm-hmm.
His sister is not in the car at the moment. She was talking to Chris Hemsworth because they've struck up a relationship. And I mean, he dies. They're pinned down by gunfire. Viola Davis's character, Carol Barrett, she shows up and pulls her gun and is cut down immediately. And then so is the U.S. Marshal, who has like that this great thing where he's like very measured and taking careful shots and he's hitting people. And you're kind of like, oh, my God, he could do it. And then he's shot. He is shot through and through. And again, this is Michael Mann. So these gunshots, they're not James Bondian, bloodless, you know, oh, I'm going to fly backwards. They're intense, flesh-ripping, awful things. And this is the, I think, the scene, Nick, that you were talking about where Viola Davis is on the ground and dying. And she blinks. Is this the one?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and you like see her looking at this tower and it fading away. I mean, like that's like what, like you said, that's something that most people wouldn't really go for. So Chris Hemsworth and his girl get away, and you know, he had just been saying like it's too dangerous, I can't allow you to help out, and now he's like, all right, well, now you're gonna help out. And she's like, you're goddamn fucking right I am. And so they've set this path. They figure out what's going on alone. They go to Jakarta alone. Chris Hemsworth wraps his abdomen in magazines. he creates like a stabbing tool by sanding down a rasp that you would use to like sharpen a saw, as well as like putting a steak knife in his belt. And he goes to fucking kill this guy after he's stolen all of his money and basically holding it hostage and saying, you know, we have to meet in order to for you to give me this money back. And there's a quick scene where they're stalking these guys through a parade of people all carrying torches. It's got to be something that happens there. I don't know what I would even call that, though. And then, long story short, Chris Hemsworth gets shot a couple times, but he still ends up fucking knifing this guy. Like, in the most brutal prison yard fashion. just, oh. Like, I literally said, holy shit, out loud in the movie theater. Because I was not expecting that. The movie, like, it got so bluntly violent, and it was like, it was great, but I was like, I guess, you know, I didn't see it coming to an end with a massacre. Michael Mann also doesn't flinch from showing innocent civilians being caught in crossfire. I will say that.
Yeah, that was maybe one of the more, like, I don't know if problematic's the right word, but I love that the climax was set there, and the way like the bodies were moving in the opposite directions, I was like very clever. But to sort of see these like bystanders getting murdered, I mean, it's the sort of thing where like in a normal action movie that doesn't bother you. But what we said, like the way he films violence, it's like, that's not something you can just sort of overlook. Like, it really disturbed me that these guys were firing rounds into crowds of hundreds of people. It was like very disturbing.
And that's the thing, like, he makes compelling action, but and like, I guess through being compelled and thrilled you are entertained, but it's not like action that's shot for maximum cool or to like be entertaining. And that's what I love about it. And that's why, on an intellectual level, he's like a thinking man's action filmmaker. And I just love it so much. And that final scene when he like breaks the guy's arm and then just, oh my God, some of the most realistic stabbing in a film, this side of the raid. And I was just like, again, holy shit. And yeah, I guess that's it.
And then they get the money, or
They still have the money apparently, and they pull some out of a cash machine, and then they're going somewhere, him and his girl on the run. I guess that's the only thing. Is kind of like, what happens next? Like, what is their life like now? She appeared to be very profitable back in China. She had It didn't seem like she was hurting for cash. She obviously was a great network programmer, probably making a lot of money. He didn't want to go back to prison, obviously, but I guess now they're just like, nah, whatever. And like, who do you report to? Like, there's no official closure on this, I guess. Like, what happens next?
Yeah.
Anyone like have any was it okay with you that there was no scene where he sits down and, you know, someone's like, well, you broke the rules, but you got the results, and we're going to let you go anyway.
I don't really need that.
Yeah, I don't really need it either, but it still is kind of like, I guess I just kind of felt like there is an official channel that had been working on this case, and now it was just taken care of by a network programmer and an ex-con. I mean, Nick, any thoughts? Is that cool?
Sure.
All right.
I don't know. I don't really.
Do you think it's trying to say anything? Like, is that a weird question to ask?
Well, a friend of mine pointed out something I thought was kind of interesting, was how the character calls himself Ghost Man, and at the end he kind of becomes a ghost.
Yeah.
In a way, how he's wearing like that white shirt, and he becomes sort of this spectral figure who is transformed by the digital image itself. Which, I liked. I thought that was a nice touch. I guess I found that the very brutal quality of it. Again, that's something I really liked. I like how it boils down to getting stabbed in the most brutal, primal way. It kind of brings everything back to sort of further the 2001 comparison. It brings everything back to apes, sort of, and shows that ultimately people are just sacks of meat.
Yeah.
And you can destroy another sack of meat if you really work hard at it. So it's for me, that's kind of exciting. Again, and if you want to go further with Man, it's like something from Manhunter almost, which, by the way, are people here fans of Manhunter?
Yes.
Was anybody else really excited how this movie directly quotes it? Did you guys notice that?
Yeah, I was gonna mention that.
Wait, yeah, dude, what is it?
Okay, so when they go to like the desert area, and he kind of gives off that really, I like how this movie boils down the entire plot to one little expository paragraph. It's like a little footnote in the movie. So he says, "Oh, he's gonna do this, and he's gonna drive up the price of zinc or something."
That's,
and then
tin,
he said,
"Actually,
right?" And he says, "That's what you're doing, isn't it, you son of a bitch?" Which is what Will Graham says in Manhunter when he goes, isn't it, you son of a bitch, when he realizes what Francis Dolarhyde is doing. I thought that was cool. that was kind of fun. And actually, although Morgan Davis Full is the only writer who's credited on the film, Mann apparently rewrote much of the script, and he was fighting for credit arbitration, if that's the right term, forgive me if it's not, but he was fighting for credit right up to the film's release, like right up until they made the end credits of the film, basically.
Oh, wow.
But he didn't get it. So it's worth pointing out, because I wonder if he kind of put that in himself.
That's possible. I would assume so. One of the things that I also liked about this movie is there's a point where Chris Hemsworth is talking to the other hacker over, I don't know, some random back channel of communication. Says that his name is Ghost Man, and the guy responds, "Piss off and die, Ghost Man." I'm like, yeah, that's the internet. It's a perfect line of dialogue. But other than that, any final thoughts on this?
Just one thing. Because Man is known as, being such like a macho existentialist director. One of the great things about his films is always their emotional resonance and the relationships in them. So this one, I was maybe a little bit let down by how much he explored the romance, because he sets up a pretty intense romantic triangle where you have Chris Hemsworth and his best friend from MIT And their hug after Hemsworth gets out of prison is a really kind of a potent moment. And then you have Hemsworth and the MIT guy's sister starting to hook up. And then it's sort of, there's a really bizarre scene where the brother goes into their room in the morning and wakes them up and sees them. And his reaction is so offhand. Like, he leaves the room so quickly that I didn't know how to read it. Either he had known about it and like didn't want to deal with it right then, or he was shocked and just didn't want to show it. Like, it was very strange. And then it ends up being solved in like a 2-minute dialogue scene on a helicopter.
Like 3 seconds.
Yeah. It's like just a couple lines.
I do love that.
I was fine with it, but like when I think of Miami Vice, one of the great scenes is when Colin Farrell and Gong Li are dancing and John Ortiz, who's in Black Hat, he's looking off from a distance. And that the triangle in that film there is established so well that scene is like amazing.
I love that, to talk really awesomely about Miami Vice for a second.
Yeah.
That like, it's kind of like, yeah, like that her husband is like, yeah, I know they're having sex. It's just casual. Like, that's kind of just what we do. I mean, we're the architects of a criminal empire. We can't stand immorality. And then like he sees a video of them dancing and, what was the guy's name?
John Ortiz,
who's in a lot of, Michael Mann.
Jose Yero.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jose Yero. So he like gets a video of it and is like, this is not casual. It's like, oh, well, they're dancing. Well, Jesus, now he has to die.
Yeah.
I do love that. I love the way that he approaches human emotion, because I guess sort of like Nick said, it's not really good. It's not a way most people would. It's a little bit like it came from an alien planet.
Yeah. And there is even a shot in this movie that was perfect where it's like, he's in the cab with her and it's just like suddenly he's looking at her neck and there's like the very romantic music. And it was, for me, it was sort of like, all right, we're back in Miami Vice. Like, this is how man does romance and it's really good. But there weren't too many moments like that for me. But still a really good movie.
All right. Well, that's it for Black Hat. It's out now. I recommend that everyone go see it. It really was good, guys. It was really, really good. So let's talk about now, what is coming out to Blu-ray and DVD? So I unfortunately have to pull that up because I was not prepared. So coming to DVD and Blu-ray on the 20th of January is as follows. Lucy, the film with Scarlett Johansson as a woman who suddenly has the ability to do stuff with her brain that most people can't, apparently. Didn't see it. Did anyone here see it?
Yeah, it was good.
Okay, excellent.
Yeah, I really wanted to, but just couldn't make it out.
We also have The Drop with Tom Hardy and James Gandolfini. We have The Zero Theorem, which we reviewed on this show, so feel free to look that up and see what we thought and see if it sounds like it's something that's up your alley. And then we got some other stuff, little re-releases, and Annabelle, the sequel something other to The Conjuring. My Winnipeg is being put onto Blu-ray. The Palm Beach Story, likewise, from Criterion. Anyone have any things that they want to...
I'd like to see My Winnipeg, which I've never seen.
But yeah, I've never seen that.
Yeah. Otherwise, no.
Oh, The Box Trolls is coming out.
Oh, I wanted to see that.
Box Trolls is great. Everyone see Box Trolls.
Oh, yeah, I've seen White Bird and a Blizzard.
How was that?
Which was pretty good. I haven't seen too many Iraqi films, but it's sort of in line with Mysterious Skin. But it looks like a really bad cover.
Yeah, it doesn't really tell you anything about
it. Yeah, but it's pretty good.
I heard that, I didn't see The Drop, but I remember someone said that it must set the record for instances where a film's title is said in the film itself. People just go, gotta make The Drop. Did you make The Drop? Drop didn't go well, et cetera, et cetera.
I'm trying to think now of what other movies could possibly go for that title.
The Master.
Django Unchained. But no, they don't say that he's unchained. Master could work.
Nah, I was kidding.
Damn it, this is going to consume me now, and I'm going to remember a shit ton.
Mordecai.
God damn it. I think we would have to, like, take away films that had the character's name in them, though. Like, in the title.
Cake.
Yep. Nothing but cake. All right, well, let's talk about what's coming out quickly, because my God. Mordecai is coming out. Let's talk about... What the fuck is this?
I just saw the trailer for it for the first time yesterday.
I've gotten that trailer like half a dozen times.
Oh, man. Yeah. This is my first time seeing it. First of all, it's weird this movie's rated R. Like, I wonder what's going on there. But yeah. I guess David Koepp and Johnny Depp wanted to make a Secret Window reunion or something.
Yeah.
I kind of enjoy the films of David Koepp. I like Secret Window. I like, what was it, Ghost Town with Ricky Gervais. I like that film.
I loved Premium Rush.
There's an esteemed film writer based in New York. I'll not say his name to protect the innocent, but I remember one time he just said, "Hey man, Premium Rush is not nothing."
that is a great way to put it. I actually thoroughly enjoyed Premium Rush.
I've never seen it, but
God, you got to see it.
Premium Rush is not
nothing. The main character's name is Wiley.
You know, it's kind of, I wonder if this says more about Depp than anything else, but this is the first Johnny Depp movie in a long time that doesn't look completely miserable. Like, it's the first one that seems like it might actually give him something to do as an actor. Am I wrong here?
Yeah, I'm sure it's a thrill to play it, but it kind of comes off as just like another Clouseau riff, and it's just kind of like, oh, well.
Yeah, but I feel like we haven't had a good Clouseau riff in a while. Certainly the Steve Martin Pink Panther movies weren't that.
Right.
So I think I'm going to become a Mordecai defender sight unseen.
Oh, of course you are.
And just see where that takes us.
Okay. Oh, bother. All right, well, also coming out is The Boy Next Door.
What? I don't know what that is.
It's Jennifer Lopez apparently, like, fucks the guy who lives next door to her, and it turns out that, like, she's a teacher and he's a student, and...
Definitely it looks funny.
Is this a comedy?
No,
it's a fucking thriller. It's like Fatal Attraction. Like, she's divorced or something. And I don't know, but it's like one of those movies where it's like, sex is this great evil that leads to like death and dismemberment.
I've literally never heard of this.
Right up there with Swim Fan. Anyway, let's move on. Black Sea is coming out. I don't know anything about this.
Kevin MacDonald's directed, Jude Law starring submarine war movie. I've heard it's okay.
Is it good?
I've heard it's okay.
I do like I used to love reading submarine like fiction, like. Does that make sense? Like, who's that guy? Tom Clancy. Like, his type of stuff. Like, techno thrillers that took place on submarines, because they're a very compelling thing. Anyway, Strange Magic is also coming out. This is an animated kids film that looks not great. Cake, the movie that people seem to think would get Jennifer Aniston an Oscar nomination. That didn't happen. Mommy, which I've heard good things about. Red Army, which I don't know about. The Duke of Burgundy, which is also something that was big at TIFF, but I did not get to see. Any other thoughts on these? What are we talking about next week?
Oh, wow.
Nothing?
It's dire.
It is dire. We'll figure something out. Maybe this will be the week we finally do drunk Labor Day. So look forward to that, guys.
Taken 3.
We could have done American Sniper. Doesn't matter, though. I would like to propose that instead of doing our usual thing where we talk about any one movie that we saw on our own, I'd like us each to recommend a Michael Mann film.
Okay.
Great idea.
You know what I'm going to do, actually? I am going to recommend a Michael Mann film, but because listeners have probably seen almost all of them, I'm going to recommend one I actually saw for the first time this week, which I didn't even think was possible. On YouTube, I watched his first feature-length directorial work, which is called The Jericho Mile.
Okay.
Which is a TV movie that he directed in 1979, and it's set in a prison, and it follows this guy who is training himself to be a runner. And it follows him as he's kind of building his skills and kind of how this sort of this kind of orbits this whole network of criminals who are living in the prison and who are kind of clashing with each other, and how his sort of idealistic acceptance of his wrongdoing kind of comes into conflict with the all the other wrongdoing going on around him. It's on YouTube. It's like 90 minutes long, so it's like a film. You know, it's a TV film, but I count it as a movie, and it's really good. I liked it a lot. I would say that it actually, I would argue, might do a more effective job setting up Mann's subsequent films than something like Thief, because I think The Jericho Mile almost has more of the criminal networks and sort of, well, one thing is that it has more of his like classic shot reverse shot character relationship building. I don't know if anybody knows what I'm actually talking about, but it's something that I really appreciate about his films, how he utilizes that very familiar cinematic tool. And The Jericho Mile features really good instances of that. It's a really good movie. I was pleasantly surprised by it. If you go on the film stage, you can find a post I wrote, including that and L.A. Takedown, his sort of dress rehearsal for Heat. That's not very good.
There was a really good article on The Dissolve about the many dress rehearsals of Heat between L.A. Takedown and then like The Crime Story and like numerous other films that he's done where he just kind of like took pieces from him because he just kept talking to this police detective guy, friend of his, that kept giving him all these stories, and he just kept weaving them in different ways until he finally got to Heat.
Oh, cool. I'll have to read that.
Yeah, yeah. Check it out on The Dissolve. It's a really, really good read. Danny King, what would you suggest?
I can actually suggest Heat, even though it's an obvious one. But
yeah,
I mentioned it.
We all say that we would say Heat at some point.
I mention it because it was one of the first Mann films I saw, and I really liked it. But subsequently, I got, you know, really into his sort of later work. But Heat screened in New York recently, and I went to see it again. So I was sort of curious how it would hold up because, you know, in my mind, it's sort of the more like classical film versus like Miami Vice or something. But it held up so well, and the crowd was sold out. It was like probably one of the best movie-going experiences I had in 2014. And what was funny, too, is the movie has moments that I know I've watched in like Al Pacino YouTube montages that I forgot were from Heat. So he has moments where he just blows up. and it was hysterical. And I was like listening to these lines and I'm like, I know that I've watched that line like dozens of times, but I never would have guessed it was actually from Heat because Heat's such like a serious, like epic film. But
is like the what is it? The she's got a great ass.
She's got a great ass, yeah.
And you got your head all the way up it.
That was just shocking. And then there's one where he's interrogating, or not really interrogating, but talking to like a potential informant.
Yeah.
And he's just like, "Give me all you got. Give me all you got."
He just keeps screaming it. It's amazing.
Yeah. So that was great. And
it's
then
a
also
great detective thing though, like it really throws people off. They're like, "Whoa, this guy's fucking nuts."
Yeah, he's crazy. And then that film features like multiple really good romance subplots, both with De Niro and Pacino. And it has a great scene where they first sort of come into contact with each other before the coffee scene where Pacino like sees Macaulay on a monitor. Anyway, that's a great scene. But the movie held up. Really well, which is the point.
All right. Yeah, I just watched it Friday.
Okay.
For the first time in a while. And I was like, holy shit. I consistently forget just exactly how amazing this movie is.
Yeah.
I could talk about Public Enemies. We've already done that. I could talk about Miami Vice. We've already done that. What I really like to do is bring people's attention to actually Luck, the HBO television program that Michael Mann directed the first episode of and was also like a major executive producer on, also written by David Milch, who did Deadwood and NYPD Blue. Is that right?
Anyone
Sorry, what's that?
David Milch, who wrote, he did NYPD Blue, right?
Yes.
So Luck is amazing. Luck is it was one of my favorite TV shows, and unfortunately, it got canceled because they had like two horses die on set. Which sucks. I'm sure that its ratings weren't that great either, and they were just kind of like, you know, it's not worth it. But I mean, it was so good. I loved that show. And Michael Mann, there was an article I read somewhere. Oh God, there's an article I read somewhere that was like talking about the extent to which Michael Mann was exerting control and how, like, he and Milch were almost coming to, like, blows over certain things because they're these two very auteurist, very volatile people. And, like, the fact that anything got done at all was a goddamn... It was a miracle, basically.
Yeah.
And Michael Mann also gave... Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Have you heard a story about one particular thing that happened in the editing of that show?
No.
Continue. I'll tell it when you're done.
Okay. Apparently, Michael Mann gave a, like, director's Bible to every director about how everything was supposed to be done so they would have a consistent visual style. And he was, like, very, very insistent on it. So, yeah. Anyway, what were you going to say, Nick?
Okay. So the story I heard, and I think it's... I'm pretty sure Milch himself verified this, but the story is that I guess Mann had a pretty big hand in editing that show, doing things like the sound mix, which means that the show was hard to hear, of course, and that and just a lot of other editing components. There's a story that Milch was so angry with the results of one episode that he went... So I guess they had an office set up for the show. He went down to the basement of the office where Mann was editing it. He walked into the editing bay with a baseball bat, and he, like... throws open the door. He's standing with a baseball bat fuming. Michael Mann turns around, sees David Milch standing there fuming, goes back to the editing. 5 minutes later, he looks over his shoulder again, and David Milch is still standing there. And he basically says, "What are you doing here?" So anyway, that's the story I've heard. I only saw the first two episodes of Luck, and then I kind of wasn't really that into it for some reason. But I would like to go back to it. I saw the pilot that Mann directed, of course, but... and the follow-up episode, but I didn't see the rest.
Good luck fucking finding it. It's not an HBO Go anymore.
I know. I actually was going to watch it over the summer, and then I saw that it was gone. It used to be there, but then
HBO... How did they decide that? Like, what did they... What is the story there?
I don't know. I think they would just like to, you know, wash their hands of that whole thing.
You can see John from Cincinnati, can't you? Anyway...
How can we watch it, man?
I don't know. I guess you got to buy a Blu-ray. I actually remember I went to like a Best Buy because I saw that it had it, and they were like, "Oh no, we just never update that. We don't have that." I was like,
"It's only $20 on Amazon." So.
I actually just got on Amazon. I'm going to buy it right now.
Okay.
Yeah, Prime. Get it by Tuesday. What?
Yeah, I think the cinematographer on Black Hat is from Luck.
Is it
like the first thing they worked on together? Yeah, I think so.
All right. Well, yeah. So that's my thing. So yeah, Luck. Check it out. Blu-ray is $20. That is cheaper than the cost of two movie tickets. And it is it's a really fantastic show. Stars Dustin Hoffman. Dennis Farina is also in it. He's great. Michael Gambon is in it. He's fantastic. Anyway. Let us move on. It's over, actually. So let's just tell the fine people where you can be seen. Danny King.
Thefilmstage.com, twitter.com/thekingbulletin, and msablackwidow.
.com. Nick Newman, what about yourself?
Thefilmstage.com and twitter.com/ghostman69.
You can also find me on thefilmstage, .com. twitter.com/BrianJRowan, my personal site, dearfilm.net. And I don't have a joke. I wasn't thinking about it. I should have thought of a joke. Piss off and die. Anyway, that's it for today. Ladies and gentlemen, join us next week when we will be back to talk about something.
Well, I saw the film not just today.
Mecca?
Hang on, guys. Yes. You there? Yeah, dude, just do it without me. You just like cut out for a little.
Oh, okay.
A minute. I don't know what's going on, but just do it without me. Because I'm just. It's going to be. It's like.
Yeah, I can barely hear you. Right,
but you know,
now,
whatever.
So
just quick
probably.
Before I leave, what did you guys think of Black Hat?
Oh, I fucking love Black Hat.
All right, whatever. All right, I'm out of here. You guys have a good. Yeah, I love whatever. Okay, well,
we love you, Dan.
Someone's behind it in a big bad way. That's cool. All right, I'm out of here.
Yeah,
that was incredible. What even just happened?
Wait, so did he like Black Hat or not?
I couldn't tell.
All right.
I was scared. Okay.
Should I keep talking?
Yeah. I could probably edit him out completely. So...